They had to be further up the river so many miles baptize the baby. They'd stop on their way back. And Father said, how do you know there'd be a new baby to baptize? Oh, this is the time, and the baby will be there. So away they went, and I came back a couple of days later, and the baby had arrived and was baptized, and they were going back down country. But you depended on your neighbors more, the same as when we were growing up. You depended on your neighbors, and you know, exchanging. I think this is one of the big things missing was the thrashings. They all got together. They found out who the best cooks were around the country. But life was a lot simpler. You didn't have so many decisions that had to be made. But the older people that were retiring when we were going to school, they had to be the salt of the earth. They were fine, fine people.
So
pardon me?
I'm going. I just come in just to see you hear what was going, but I've got to get home.
All right.
Shut that thing off.
Bye. Margaret, according to my mathematics, you would have been going to SS number 4 school about 1914, is that right?
That'll be about it.
What was a day like at in school at that time? What was a traditional day in the school? It was a How many children would be attending SS number 4?
Oh, in our school, when we'd be going, they'd average around 34. And we all had, I never can remember an outside teacher. It was always one of Jesse Fraser and Netta Ferris and Jean Ferris. That'll be it. But as soon as they had enough money saved up, they'd go on to university and get further ahead.
Would those teachers have gone to a normal school? Would they have taken some training?
They must have. No, it must have been a normal school.
Okay. Well, what was the day like? What did you do when you were there for 9 o'clock when the bell rang?
Oh yes, when the bell rang, then it'd be her that would ring it. And then we'd all get into our proper seats, and little ones, we'd all have something to be working on, and then she'd have the smaller ones first, I guess, so they wouldn't get restless, and have all these grades to teach. Some of them, one year there would be quite a number trying the entrance and getting into high school, and then another year maybe only one or two. The I always remember, he always came to school. It was a wet day in the fall or that. And he wore his sister, Una, that taught over at Middleton. She had this leftover hat that she wasn't wearing, and it had a feather in it, and Jock would come to school wearing this. He had no tam or cap, and he'd wear his sister's cast-off hat. We were used to it, and we didn't think it was funny after the first time around.
Was that Jock Melbourne?
That was Jock Fraser.
Oh, Jock Fraser?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of W.F. Fraser's, Mr. Fraser. Mrs. Fraser was Irish, and they educated the family all away from the farm. Peter Ferris did the same. John Ferris is away up, I don't know who lives there now, where the old Johnny Sinclair farm was across the road from them. But people, those older people that were leaving this earth then, they were fun people.
Did you have a hot lunch at school in the wintertime?
Oh, no. You made your own lunch and took it. And pot-bellied stove and then the furnace. And then my sister older than myself, she got, and another one, they got so much for sweeping the school out. And then fortunately, McClellan's, they moved away from the corner. He was a thrasher. He'd go around to all the thrashings, and that was what he depended on to keep him for the rest of the year. And McDonald's, they bought and they moved in. And we did, we had our school nurse, she was Mrs. McDonald. Any child that was hurt at school, teacher would send her over to Mrs. McDonald. And she knew whether the child should go home or the child maybe just was having a problem in school and send him back to school. But she was the one that recognized the little Archer girl had a problem, and they got her home, and she was the one that had this infantile paralysis thing that was going around. And she recovered, though, eventually. But she recognized that she was a sick child and should be sent home.
So who would have been going to public school when you went to public school? Who are there any of the people you went to school with, are they still with us?
Well, Margaret Holmes, Margaret MacArthur, but she's lying in the hospital in Newmarket. And, Bill's still up the road on the, that was the original MacArthur home up near 27. And they were living on what was eventually our hill farm. And there was a big family of boys and just the one girl, Margaret, and my age. And then the brother and the sister decided they would move into town and let the brother and his big family take over the home place. And they lived on the corner of Ferry and what's the name of the school, the street goes by, what was the old high school?
Queen?
The public
Queen?
Frederick Street?
Pardon? Oh,
Queen Street, isn't it?
Yeah.
Queen?
Yeah.
That'd be it then. They were on the north west corner. And they took in high school students to board. That was when the Ferguson girls came over from Schaumburg, and poor Mr. MacArthur, he was so browned off at all these boys. And then out at night, and of course, and no one stayed out late at night no time. The only one we were out late at night was the presentation for who? And who they had the presentation for? And the sun was coming up. It was a party that Mrs. Robbie Sutherland, Vira Bateman's grandmother, gave. Imagine her having a party. And she not only opened her house and had a party, but she played the piano, and she had some person there on the violin for dancing. And that was the time we were coming home when the sun was coming up. And
that's terrible.
At her age. She'd been a Ferguson, Mrs. Robbie Sutherland.
Everybody should have that experience at least once in their life, Margaret.
Pardon me?
I say everybody should have that experience at least once in their life. Some people have had it more than once, but everybody should have it at least once. You just come home and change your clothes and go on to work.
Oh, dear. Well, all the... these are things I think about some nights when I go to bed. you know, all the changes since we came into the neighborhood. And but I think the most to everyone was when hydro came, and you didn't have to pump in water. That was one of the chores, pump water, and the cattle never seemed to get enough water.
What year was that, Margaret?
Pardon me?
What year was that when the hydro came in?
I've just forgotten. Do you remember?
Well, there was hydro come in about 32, 33.
I was away from home at the time.
Yeah, that was about the
And
first.
Also, Davy, he looked after installing the thing, and it was the winter time. And, well, Oswald wasn't that well himself some days.
But you didn't get it in originally.
Pardon me?
You weren't one of the first people to get it in.
No. The dairy farmers on the fifth line, they were the ones that were protesting for power. And when they got it out, they brought it out, and then what was Fraser's Lane went down that laneway right to the fifth concession and then along. And then when it was that close and they had it measured off at home, well, there'd be only one hydro pole, you know, to get it in. And we were able to get it in because it was some time before they got back to the fifth line. And it wasn't, they had men working all the time, but materials would run short or that type of thing. But all when hydro came and the water pumping in a bathroom, that was wonderful.
Did you put it all in at the same time?
No, the well had to be drilled this time. Before that, it was always by hand. Now, Graham, he had the well driller come and went down and with the new machinery and that, got water, and we've never been lots of hard water ever since. And I wonder sometimes maybe it will run dry with all those people on the golf course because they just open up the tap and let her go.
When did you get the telephone?
Oh, we didn't get the telephone until late on, but they had a telephone of a kind. Now, these McDonald sisters that lived over on the fourth, and they had relatives, a Fraser family, an aunt married to a Fraser, that lived over to the southwest on the same road. And then there's Billy Johnson's away down the road by the river. And the cousin, he was interested in this type of thing, and battery thing, and so what he did was string up a thing that they could communicate if they wanted anything, and there was some way of tapping this thing, they could get their message across. But they were the first ones then, and this Alec Fraser eventually got a proper telephone.
Well, that was the Beaton Telephone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beaton Telephone Company. What would it be, 1920?
Around there. So we didn't need any television then when we had the party line.
What was your ring?
Pardon me?
What was your ring?
What was ours? I've forgotten now how many rings ours was. On the thing. Isn't that funny?
Short and two longs?
Yeah, it could be that.
Ours was 3-1.
Yours was 2-1.
3-1.
3-1. Yeah, but all Bell telephone, it was. But these other ones, and this Alec Fraser, he was the one that had the one the first communication line hitched up out in the settlement. And it worked very well.
Were you at home when they drained the marsh? When Professor Day was running the dike, building the dikes?
When what?
When they built, when they had the barge and were digging out the drainage ditch for the marsh. Were you home then?
Part of the time. Professor Day's wife had taught up the north where my mother came from, and so they made a connection, but he went along with Mr. Fraser and those, you know, drain the marsh, and he gave up good profession at Guelph. And died, and you know, poverty stricken. You know, there wasn't the money. His family suffered, and she took over then. Had the library, that part. But he died in his tracks, Professor Day. But this is what he envisioned. You know, coming true, and the abundance of food it produces. You know, but these now are supposed to be dredged out this year, but I don't think they've gotten around to doing it. They're pretty slimy and dirty. You know, you'd think there'd be a lot of.
Was there much interest by the local people in what was happening?
Yes. Yeah, some, of course, there's all, you don't get every person in agreement. Some thought it was the craziest idea that ever was. And Mr. Day had a hard time that way getting it, but both governments, federal and provincial, could see it. And then the Honorable Rowe was one that went for it. That, but Mr. Day, and his family, you know, they had a very difficult time. And but Mr. Day would know that how things eventually would be, but it's too bad he couldn't have lived longer to have seen the real outcome. But I remember a small child go down to Fraser's on there, and Mr. Fraser being there, maybe some person would be visiting, and oh no, I'd have to stop in the summertime and be a glass of lemonade and a cookie, and some of these people, you know, they'd, and then he had a nephew that was interested in it too, and that helped. But of course, there were those that thought it was a very crazy idea. Never. We could always, as children growing up in the frosty wintertime, we could always pinpoint where the stills were. There were always those that made their home brew down there. And you could see the steam. You knew where to go. But Mr. Fraser, he had a nephew that worked for the government in Ottawa, and he always kept him well supplied. Something to do with the liquor there. And the time Mr. Ferris across the road and father went into the thing at. They got up to Fraser's, and they were fishing, and got up to Fraser's, and the first thing Mr. Fraser did after he stopped laughing was he did give them a preference, so he had that much in the house, and he poured them this liquor, and Mr. Ferris and father, they got up the lane safely. They would forget all about the fish. But everyone, when I was a child, I had a bottle of liquor in the house because there was no aspirin, there was no emergency room. And if a man working got a broken arm, the first thing you gave him was a thing of liquor, and then get them in to the doctor. There was no Newmarket Hospital.
That was when they—that's when they coined the phrase for medicinal purposes. What about events that stand out in your memory? You know, things like like in modern times would be the fire in Bradford here in 1957. But did you have events back in the early days when you lived there you really remember that there were ones that really stand out in your memory?
Oh, I don't know. In time, we had a family living with us for quite a while with children. They get flooded out or what off the marsh, and stayed for a while. But of course, they liked to be with their own people, and we were Anglo-Saxons. And when they came, these people were coming into the marsh. There was every nationality. Frank Saint said every nationality. They even have Chinese and Japanese. Every nationality that you could name.
Did that change Bradford?
Pardon?
Did that change Bradford? Did that make Bradford different?
Oh, yeah. Bradford then began to expand. And people, it was the Europeans, you see, they'd go in for all this hard work. Where our own, we tend to stay on the highland. The odd place farmer did go for. Fred Doan, he farmed a bit of it for a while.
Mostly Ralph, his brother.
Off the Fraser farm. I would consider the Fraser farm the most interesting. I guess because we were small children at the time, and they were all finishing. The ones we knew were the younger ones of the family.
Yes. Well, and Emerson Ferris had 100 acres of marsh.
Yeah.
Cleared at one time.
It belonged, that was the original Ferris farm down in there. And they considered that other land, just waste. Land, and then Ferris's that were there, Emerson's people, and they moved in when the grandfather was dying, and took over there because the farm Ferris farm could neither be sold nor disposed of in any way as long as the brother Frank was alive, and after he was an unfortunate man, he was one of the older ones in the farm, on the farm. And one of the odd things that happened was that Mr. Robert Ferris, he came across and explained to Father that his brother would be coming over, looking at through the house and that. Because the brother had owned the farm. And Frank came over a few times and had a look around, and that was it. He never came back. Before this, he'd wander through the house, and the one thing he didn't like about it, we did away with the prayer room. They had a room upstairs they used for morning prayers and whatnot. And that later became our bathroom when Hydro came. And that's the thing I think about sometimes when I'm in the bathtub.
That's the prayer room.
Yeah. But another thing, people say, oh, great big house. But the way the house was built in those days, you see, it was built so that the hired man he'd be in the back part of the house. He'd be under, you'd be under one roof, but they'd be under the back part.
Do you know what year that house was built, Margaret?
I think it was built around, no, I wouldn't say for sure. I'd have to go back and look it up in the... But Sam Ferris, he built the barn, I don't know which came first, the house or the barn. Probably the barn was built first, and then he moved off, and the people that were on it, Hanlon, that was their name. That was another big episode. And he went down to Coombs, where you live, and helped butcher the beef, and Mr. Coombs gave him what he thought was a good helping, a home for helping them, and Mr. Coombs, they were a very religious family, and so when he goes out the next morning, why, here's the hind quarter of beef gone. And it wasn't easy, hard job to track him up home. And he came to the door and he asked the man if he'd taken that beef home. And there was the evidence. You could see the blood where the thing had been dragged in. And he said, if I'd known that you were in such need, I could have given you more. You didn't have to steal it. So I guess Mr. Coombs would give him more. But it wasn't long until Hanlon, I guess he played these pranks too many times on other people, and he moved out and went back over into Hockley. I don't know if they gave him a farewell party or not. They didn't mention that part. But in those days, farmers retiring, they always had the big party. And I can think of Mrs. Robbie Sutherland. I don't know how she had the patience, you know, to have all this crowd in. And not only that, provide the lunch, and she played the piano as well. Dave Sutherland would probably be on the violin. He liked music. And no, we made our own good times. We didn't have halls to go to. But of course, when cars came, that was the big difference. You could go then, every person in the community went to the same church. And when cars came, well, you could go to your own denomination. But every person seemed to observe Sunday more in those days.
Which was your church in when you first came to the farm?
It had to be over on the fifth line.
The settlement church, Presbyterian church.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just to go back to school.
It'd be filled. It was all horse and buggies, and. You had to be there on time or else you'd be left standing. Some person else would be in the seat. So they didn't have any trouble getting people out in those days. And then, as I said, in the summertime, well, you always took some person home with you for dinner.
Did you have Presbyterian services?
Yeah.
In other words, 2 hours long?
Oh, no.
No?
We left those up north. They used to be that long, and some of them up north. But, they had their differences in that era, too, because the old Kirk, you see, and the ones that didn't like the Gaelic, started to go over on the other road and have their own church.
The old Kirk was still operating? It still had a congregation?
The old Kirk?
Was it a congregation there at that time?
Yes. And people walked. People walked. And when we were first down, this is where we always had our Sunday school concerts. And you know, the stove was just inside the doorway, and that long line of pipes right the length of the church. And I often thought, after I was grown up, what if there ever had been a fire in there? Because the church was always just packed. And it was quite an event, you know, the Sunday school concert.
The Sunday school concert or the school concert?
Well, it'd be both that you would have. But they didn't last that long. And, you know, the last burial, I guess, that I can think of was Emerson Ferris.
Yeah.
If there hadn't, what would have happened to Emerson? Their plot was right there by the church. No, it's a lovely old building. But you see, they had their disagreements too. And I thought, come, we had two Presbyterian churches in the neighborhood.
Was Dave Sutherland a surveyor on the canal? Did he survey the canal, Dave Sutherland?
No, Dave Sutherland was surveying out west. Oh. And the brother, this was his profession. That Sutherland family and the Fraser family and, Peter Ferris, all the way to school. And he was west and had a good position out there with the government. And then the brother died very suddenly, Walter Sutherland. I guess it was a ruptured appendix. And when he died so suddenly, he was only sick a matter of 4 or 5 days, and he was dead. So Dave came back with the idea of maybe selling or whatnot. And then after he gave it a second thought, it was an old, had been in the family, always in the family. And he gave up going back west, and it's a good job he did, because he found his wife. Then he met up with Myrtle Coots, and the two of them were musical, and
went together for about 25 years and then got married.
Yeah. Well, nobody hurried in those days. No.
Was Percy Karskadden, did Percy Karskadden live in the community when you were when you went to school there? That was that a Karskadden family, or did he come in later?
No, he was younger. They were a younger connection that came down from Barry Way. They were in the same neighborhood, a cousin. Kay cousin up on Muskoka River at Port Sydney, and she went down there to teach, and she married a farmer and stayed there, and then she brought some of her connection down, but that old farm up on the Muskoka River now is a boarding school for boys, I was told. It's a way in off. We always used to, your best way of getting out onto what eventually was number 11 was to paddle up the river to Port Sydney, and then there was what they called a stage. And it would get you back up to my grandmother's. And the main road going north at that time, before number 11 ever came into being, was right by, came right through the village, right by Grandma and Grandpa Wingfield's door. But I can hear Grandpa Wingfield saying, yet he, and shake his head, and a man has to be daft to come to a country like this. Well, after coming, you know, from the gardens and Duke of Hamilton's estate, and then come out there. But the land was for free. That's what drew these Scottish people in. It was for free. Now, some of them were, my grandfather was one of the, he was a great storyteller. If he'd been in this day and age, I'm sure he would have been writing articles for magazines or that type. And when we'd come bouncing in with Mother, we'd be taken into his, into the dining room, and he had his dormer window and his plants there, and he could watch all the people coming and going in the village, and he'd get us up on his knee and tell us the story, and that'd keep us as quiet as mice. And Mother and Grandma would have the meal then ready for us. But he was the one that told us the story about Burke and Hare, and Grandma came in and, oh, don't be telling the Baron stories like that. They'll never sleep. And, you know, I always thought it was, you know, fairy tale until I went into nursing, and indeed it was, and that was the truth. Burke and Hare did take travelers off the highway at night and put them in the feather bed and smother them, and then sell the body, you know, for doctors. There were nothing in the, no universities for dissection or that. So you wouldn't want to be caught out, and people walking.
Where most of these chaps practice their profession?
Pardon?
Where did they practice their profession?
Who, Burke and Hare?
Yeah.
I don't know, they'd be undercover. I don't know who they told the bodies to. But this is it's horrible to think of. You know, healthy people, it's all right in this day and age. You know, I guess it's a general question when people die in hospital. You know, everyone, sometimes it has to be an autopsy. But then maybe, well, maybe not so much now as it used to be. I think they've had lots of time to find out everything about a human body, but then the odd case does come up, I guess. But you see, insulin came along, and we had people from all over the world come to Toronto, filling up beds, and Dr. Banting had relatives enough to put each one. Who was the cousin he had in our, at the Western at that time? But, you know, as soon as they'd have the insulin, you had to have the food right there for them. And this one man, especially, that was there from down Boston way, and the door, he couldn't get the door unlocked. So we ended up, he pushed the bed up against the thing, and we got the tray in through the transom, piece by piece, because he'd already had the insulin, and you're just supposed to wait so long, and then you have to eat that food. And that was one of the experiences. But there was a big connection of those Bantings. And all the things, you know, I think in times are ones coming along now must be dull, because all the things that we saw come, or I saw come in my...
They've missed a lot of fun.
Yeah, they missed a lot. All those homemade parties like Mrs. Robbie Sutherland. And, well, the son was there after she was gone, and then he did get married. But I think the things that you, the more you do yourself, that's why I like to do all the things that I'm doing, do them myself. I don't like, if it's something that I need, pardon me, now I'd be glad of help, but I like my work around in the house and what. But it made me a tidier person because I know if I put thing in a different place, I may have a struggle to find it.
Okay, I think we've kind of reached the point here where we're trying to reach for ideas and that. And I think, Margaret, we've had a very interesting morning. It's been it's been very interesting. It's been very easy. See, I said at the very beginning we were just going to have a chat.
Yeah.
And that's what we've had, right?
Yeah.
And it's
well, I wish you could have known some of these people that I knew, you know, growing up. You know, the Fraser family, especially, and. In Peter Ferris's, but as they say, they educated their families away from the farm and made a big change, but the marsh made the biggest change.
Yeah, that changed the whole country.
Yeah, yeah, that was the biggest change. And now, right at this present time, which one of them said, for a bushel of carrots, a bunch of carrots I'd be getting in the store is comparatively the same price they're getting for a bushel. But then the market value changes. They may be up and down. I hope they're getting more now, because that wouldn't even pay for their seed, their labor.
It's not much different this year, is it? 7.5 or 2 cents, it's $1.50 or $2 a bushel.
Pardon me?
It's about $1.50 or $2 a bushel this year.
Oh, what, the carrots?
Yeah.
Isn't that awful? Yeah.
I bought a big 5-pound bag of carrots for 99
cents. Mm-hmm. How much for the 5-pound bag?
It was 99 cents.
Yeah.
You can imagine what the farmer got then for it.
Yeah.
About 10 cents.
Did you ever hear that story about Jack Sutherland getting married?
Jack Sutherland?
Yeah.
Or Dave Sutherland?
No, Jack.
Jack.
The story that was told to me, now, I don't know whether it was true or not, that she was a Hall Landing woman, and he was from the settlement, and... the floating bridge that you were talking about there.
Yeah.
That the lumber company had turned around and moved the bridge. And she was on one side of the river with the minister, and he was on the other side.
Yes.
And they performed the wedding that way, and then he wanted to sleep with his wife that night, so he put the clothes on top of his head and swam in the river to go to the wedding in the Hall Landing.
I remember.
Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Oh, some of the stories. you know, those ones that went ahead of us, you know, the things that they could do, they had no implement place to go to. They had to do their own. I remember one time in the old Model T Ford and up around Gravenhurst didn't this flock of animals go ahead, and the outcome was that the radius rod was bent, and in those days motors would always stop, and the man stopped and he surveyed it all, and he said, well, he said, if it was my car, he said, I'd get that radius rod out. He says, it's hot, and you got a good stone fence over there, and it'll straighten you out and get you to the where you're going. And of course, Huntsville was where we were going. Well, that radius rocker was never taken out, never gone to the garage, stayed there. And that car, I don't know how many miles we got out of that Ford car. And I don't think we ever had as much pleasure out of any other car as we get out of that one. And I can hear my sister saying, "And I'm not driving out of here with every seat filled." So that meant eeny, meeny, miny, moe. She'd taken the driving lessons drive the car. And, well, I guess it wasn't that complicated in those days, driving the car. But father, he wasn't, he was a little on the old side for, he would drive, but he would much prefer the Cheeto. His reflexes, I guess, are like mine are today. They weren't too good.
Did you drive the car?
I did, but I wasn't mechanically inclined. All those I could think of was in the back of the head, instead of concentrating on the driving, was, what if something happens to this car? No, I would have made a poor driver, but I was a good seat, front seat.
Oh, driver.
Yeah.
You had a driver's license, though, did you?
Yeah.
Well, you were in the day when you just had to go down to the and ask for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
My mother had one of those, and she kept it up to date all the time, that she, as long as she drove. But she never had a test. All you did, you just went down, filled it out, and got your license.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, no. I think as you get older, you should, for your own, for the public's protection at least, and for your own.
Public's protection.
Come on.
I don't know. I think the first part where you talk about the public's protection is some of the younger people that need more instruction than some of the older folks.
Yeah. Well, there was a man that worked in the garage, and the stipulation was that he drive us up to Huntsville, and that would clinch the deal. And we always had a family gathering, the Darling family, after the forests were gone, they had to strike out, and some went west, some went south. And when they used to come to visit, they'd take them around to the relatives. Then they decided, well, they'd have one gathering, and everybody came and had the day together, and we generally. You do?
Yeah.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I used to go up with Ogilvy, Gordon Ogilvy. I used to go up there with him the other day.
Oh, yeah. Down here, oh, here I was saying about Dave Ogilvy meeting us when we came down here and taking us in for dinner to his sister's, Mrs. Wardman. And, no, the Ogilvies are smart. They pulled out and got out of the north country and got back to Bond Head. And I don't know which of the family, I guess it was and Grandma Darling, she didn't want to take anything off the wagon or that, and when she saw what she was going into, and she said, if we go back, and I don't know how many days it took them to travel from Godrich up there, she said we could get our farm back. But after, you know, they got the rest and the food, and the next morning it was a lovely day, they said, and then she began to think, well, these older ones that were settled in there, they'd be separated, and she decided they don't stay. It's a nice place now, a tourist.
Okay, it's about 10 after 12, Margaret.
Yeah.
I think we'll call it quits for this morning.
Pardon me?
I think we'll call it quits for this morning.
Yeah.
And we'd like you to think about some of the things that you come to mind that you'd like to have mentioned that you forgot to mention. And what we'd like you to do is just take and put a piece of paper on the kitchen counter and just make a note of them. And then... And then when you have...
I have my calendar, you know, and I mark down things on it.
Okay. All right.
And I shove it under the table.
All right.
I'm a television in one corner, and my table